I'm going to talk about a bottom-up social movement called the Joint Learning Initiative on National and Global Responsibilities for Health. This social movement is going to appear as an editorial in the World Health Organization Bulletin in October and will be one of the features of the World Health Report of the WHO in 2011. There are many people in this room and around the world who I must thank, who have joined as partners, Thomas Gaubauer of Medical International, Gorik Ooms, Harald Sims from Norway, Thomas Pogge from Yale and well known to you all, Section 27 on Health and Human Rights in South Africa, the Pan-American Health Organization, Anand Grover, the Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health from India, and many, many others. The reason for this is that preventable and treatable injuries and diseases are currently overwhelming sub-Saharan Africa, the Indian subcontinent, and other impoverished areas of the world, as you heard articulately from Dr. Gupta this morning. Every year, 8 million children die before the age of 5. And every year, 500,000 women die in pregnancy or childbirth. And every year, more than 4 million people die of AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis. And by 2020, 70% of non-communicable diseases, cancers, heart disease, diabetes, will be in the developing world. And in 2011, the UN is going to have only its second high-level summit on a health issue. The first, Transform the World. It was on AIDS. And the second will be on non-communicable diseases, which is devastating the world. Healthy life expectancy in Africa is 45 years of age, a full quarter of a century less than in high-income countries. Many of these, if not most of these early deaths, are avoidable with preventable suffering, leading to countless lives that are unfulfilled. But why are these health outcomes among the world's poor so dire, despite the fact that we have quadrupled international development assistance for health over the past two decades? The reason is that we have inefficient and ineffective spending of our resources. And for that reason, we are initiating the Joint Learning Initiative on National and Global Responsibilities for Health to articulate an overarching, coherent framework for a shared responsibility for health beyond the Millennium Development Goals as the next big issue for the world's community. What the Joint Learning Initiative seeks to forge is an international consensus about broadly imagined, innovative solutions to the four critical problems facing the global community, which are the defining issues of our time. The first is, what is an essential package of health services and goods that every human being has under the human right to health? The second is clarifying states' duties towards their own inhabitants under the right to health. The third is, what do all states, and particularly the wealthy states, have as a matter of social justice and responsibility to the world's poor? And finally, how can we have a new global health architecture to improve health as a matter of social justice? I will briefly deal with each of these. The fundamental question for the Joint Learning Initiative will be to discover and define the essential package of health services and goods that every human being has a right to under the right to health. This will include WHO's health services building blocks, which are many of the healthcare services we've heard about today: workforce development, information, financing. The second is basic access to essential vaccines and medicines and technologies, and most importantly, what I call basic survival needs. One of the things that I find everywhere I go in the world is that people are talking about development as if they don't understand what health is. And even here today, we focused very much on health care, which is only a very small part of what makes people healthy. What we know that makes people healthy is basic survival needs, sanitation, hygiene, nutritional food, potable water, pest control like mosquito abatement, and tobacco control. The right to health requires that these services be universally accessible, acceptable, affordable, and of good quality. Second, what do states owe their own people as a matter of the right to health? Too often we just jump to what the international community should do, but the primary responsibility to fulfill the human right to health is the government of each country. So, for example, the WHO estimates the cost of providing a minimal package of health services, excluding basic survival needs, as $40 per person annually at a minimum. This is a pitifully small amount that we can afford all around the world. In Abuja, Nigeria, African heads of state pledged at least 15% of their national health budgets devoted to the health sector. Yet, 10 years later, African per capita government health expenditure is under the WHO minimum by nearly $10. And this is a very bare minimum. And they promised 15%, but it is less than 10%. And this compares pitifully with what happens in other parts of the world. States also have a responsibility to govern well, what we call good governance, honestly, transparently, and accountably, and with the full participation of civil society. Third, what do all countries owe to the world's least healthy people, and particularly the world's wealthy? This is the powerful point that Armando was making. Framing global health as aid, as we all do, is fundamentally flawed because it presumes an inherently unequal benefactor-dependent relationship. Rather, we need to see development assistance as a global collaboration that requires a collaborative response to shared risks and fundamental human rights, where all states have mutual responsibilities. If you give aid only as a matter of charity, then it means that financial contributions are at the donor's discretion, whether it's the United States or the European Union or the Gates Foundation. They decide how much to give, for what, and to whom. And consequently, aid is not predictable, nor is it scalable, nor is it sustainable. And it undermines low-income countries' ownership of and responsibility for the health of their own people. Rather, the global obligation to equitably contribute to global health derives from international law based upon human rights and global social justice and solidarity. The state's contribution means everything as a matter of justice. Yet, high-income countries have not come close to fulfilling their 1970 pledge to spend 0.7% of GNI per annum on official development assistance. 4 decades later, their contribution stands at less than half, 0.31%. Finding innovative ways to ensure adequate and enduring funding with agreed upon priorities based upon basic survival needs will be vital to ensuring that poor countries gain the capacity to fulfill the right to health for themselves. And then finally, what kind of global health governance is needed to make all states live up to their mutual responsibilities? This morning at the Bundestag, we had a very important meeting and where we discussed the idea that it's not only a matter of how much money is given, but spending the money we have effectively to really improve the health of the world's population. Yet there are fundamental problems, and among these problems are serious problems of fragmentation, duplication, and even confusion among the deluge of global health actors and initiatives. We recently invited African health ministers to Oxford University, and we asked them to speak from their hearts without DFID or USAID or the Global Fund or others in the room. And they were speaking from despair, saying that they had no idea of the kinds of programs in their own countries, no ability to plan, complete fragmentation and confusion, a lot of bureaucracy, and therefore were unable to take ownership. Importantly, the global health architecture of the future has to reinforce the leadership and normative and political role of the World Health Organization, which as a UN agency must have the legitimacy, authority, and resources to support all countries in guaranteeing the right to health. The Joint Learning Initiative promises a bottom-up social movement similar to those of campaigns that rid the world of landmines like Medical Internationals and the campaign to fight the scourge of HIV/AIDS. Civil society now is moving rapidly towards a broad health rights and social justice agenda, embracing the human right to health as a focal point. I would like to simply end by quoting from my good friend Thomas Gabar, who has said this morning and many times that the Joint Learning Initiative and the Health Justice Campaign is a movement that simply cannot be stopped because it is based upon an ethical imperative and the international human right to health, which is part of international law and global social justice. Thank you very much.